Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
If you'd like to go ahead and turn in your Bibles to the book of Ruth, chapter 2, that's where we'll be spending our time tonight, Ruth chapter 2. And if you want to take one of the Bibles that's in the pew rack right in front of you, that's page 307. As we continue in our journey through a short but important book in Scripture. Obviously, there's a lot taking place. I know what's already been mentioned. We've had students that have gone back to school in elementary and high school. A lot of our college students starting back. We're in that back-to-school time frame, and so another important reminder is that this coming Sunday morning, we'll have our first graders receiving a Bible from our elders before our morning worship service. This is a special time. If you have not seen this, it's so exciting to see the children receive these Bibles from the elders, to see the encouragement that comes with that. You'll want to be here early to be part of that. And so don't forget about that, parents. Don't forget about that as well. We also had an announcement earlier today that I think bears repeating. I'm thankful for our elders here. I'm thankful for the fact that they're constantly looking for ways to minister and to lead others and listening to this congregation and trying to find needs that can be met. And one of those is that every Sunday morning, after our morning worship service, we'll have two or three elders that are available right out in the elders' meeting room, that if you go right out this doorway and turn to your left, that's where they'll be, and they'll be available to pray with you and to pray for you. And I think that's just a tremendous opportunity that we have. I hope that you'll take advantage of that. Sometimes it's helpful to have a more private setting to discuss some things, and I'm thankful that they're willing to do that. We also want just to remind everyone about the supplies and things that the group will be taking to Southgate. Southgate will be taking to Baton Rouge with the Goodwood Church of Christ. Many of you know Doug Burleson. When Doug was in school getting his PhD, that's the church where he preached, and so it's a great congregation that's in a lot of need. I talked with Jody, the youth minister at Southgate today. He just returned last night about midnight, and they're going to leave out early Thursday morning. And so whatever we can get in from those lists that are there, we'll need to get that in by Wednesday, preferably Wednesday afternoon. That way they could load everything up and be ready to head out early in the morning. I know we have several that have already donated to our own disaster relief ministry, and so we've got some of those resources we can send with them. Others of you have already made plans and made donations, and so anything we can do, I know, would be appreciated by the church there. That church also, in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, did some tremendous work in their immediate area and was kind of a hub for some of that disaster relief. And so they're back in that role again, and we want to give them all the help that we possibly can. And so there's a lot we have to be prayerful about and a lot we have to think about. And as we begin tonight, as we spent time in Ruth chapter 1 last week, we were at a time of testing. And as we've just sung about, all of us face some testing of our hearts. And when we get to Ruth chapter 2, we're entering into one of those moments that has a tremendous impact on the life of Ruth. There are some moments that when we look back on them, it's unbelievable to see the level of significance that they had in our lives. I was sharing with our class this morning something I read over the week that was interesting about the life of Alexander Graham Bell. And that is, as he was working on developing the telephone, what everyone was focused on was not a telephone, but having a better telegraph. That's what everyone wanted. They wanted a telegraph where you could send more than one message on a single wire. That was the innovation everybody was going for. That's the path to becoming a millionaire. And there was a time when one of his investors, one of Graham Bell's investors, speaking on behalf of him, ask Western Union if they would like to purchase all of his patents on the telephone, all of the patents that he had, for $100,000. Now, if you think about everything that happened as a result of the telephone, looking back on it, that's a pretty good deal. But at the time, they passed. And it was only years later you could look back on that and say, that was a significant moment. Things almost went in a totally different direction. Sometimes we have moments like that in our lives. Sometimes we have moments where we look back on and think, I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't met this person. If we hadn't gone here. If we hadn't moved to this place and met this family. Or in this neighborhood we have these neighbors and we have all of these connections. Maybe it's a significant moment where you look back and think of the first time you met your spouse. Maybe it's an experience that you had when you were in school that drew you closer to a good friend. Maybe it's a job you had that opened up a whole new world of opportunities. But when we get to Ruth chapter 2, we're in one of those moments. I can only imagine how Ruth and Naomi would have looked back on what we're about to read, what they would have thought, how they would have thought about what took place here. What we're going to see in this chapter is really just a very simple reminder that character matters. And in the fields, as it's time for harvest, we're going to look specifically at two people, Boaz and Ruth. And in each one of them, we're going to see their kind of character. I know a lot of us have been watching the Olympics. You may have been looking at the Summer Olympic events. When we think about kindness and we think about character, even though it's not the right season for it, the Winter Olympics are always something that has fascinated me as well, thinking about the different events that take place. And in 1964, there was one of those stories that illustrates kindness and character. When the two-man bobsled event, the main competition was between the Italian crew and the crew from Great Britain. And in 1964, Eugenio Monti was the leader after his final run. His team was poised to win the gold in the two-man bobsled. There was only one other team that could beat him, and that was from Great Britain, led by Tony Nash. As Nash and his teammate were getting ready for their event, at this crucial moment, there was something that happened to the bobsled. That is, there's a critical bolt that snapped off. As soon as Monti heard that, he took the corresponding bolt from his own sled. He'd already raced. He didn't need it anymore. He took that bolt and went and sent it up to Nash. Nash fixed it, fixed his bobsled. He went down the course and won the gold medal. Isn't it interesting that you could look back on someone's character, and when they had an opponent that was caught, and they say, you know what? That's his loss. That's their fault for not being more prepared. Let them figure out what to do about this. He showed some character. And he showed some kindness. It might have ended up costing him a gold medal, but he was illustrating something a little bit more important. We know stories like that, and they stand out because kindness in character makes a difference. And when we looked at Ruth and Boaz in Ruth chapter 2, we are constantly reminded of their character. Now, there's a phrase when you're looking in Ruth chapter 2 that I think is interesting in verse 3. When we'll read the first couple of verses in a minute, but look down at verse 3. When Ruth set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Now, if you're just reading this in a straightforward way, and you're looking at Ruth, you say, well, she just happened to be in the right place at the right time. Isn't that a good coincidence? Isn't that positive? Aren't we glad that it worked out that way? And no, we don't see the divine intervention that we might see when God's leading the people of Israel out of Egypt. We don't see a pillar of cloud or a pillar of fire that's leading Ruth to a specific part in the field. But I have to think, if I'm reading through the book of Ruth, that it might have just so happened that she was there, but it wasn't just a coincidence. That God is working providentially, behind the scenes, guiding events so that the bitterness we saw in chapter 1 could be redeemed in a literal way by meeting Boaz. And so if you remember, we left Ruth and Naomi coming back from Moab, back into Israel. There's a big question mark as to what their future is going to be. especially in that society and in that economy. If you had two widows that were on their own, things didn't look good. They didn't have any family. They're coming back. Ruth is coming as a Moabitess, and so she's coming from a different background to Israel. How are they going to respond? And so we begin in verse 1 as they're determining how they're going to make life for themselves. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Now we learn a lot about Boaz, especially if we look through the lens of the culture where Boaz lives. Because what we find out very quickly when we look at the character of Boaz is that our actions matter. The way we act towards other people makes a difference. Now, you probably noticed as we read through that more than once Boaz is described as being from the clan or the family of Elimelech. And the reason that repetition is there is because we need to be constantly reminded of his connection with Naomi's household. That's going to come into play later. And so Elimelech was Naomi's husband. Now you have Boaz, a man from that family. And he comes and he is described from the very beginning of this chapter as a worthy man. It's hard to know just exactly what all is entailed in that description of Boaz, but it seems consistent if we look at the way his actions are and look at the way he's described, that this is someone of worth. This is a salt of the earth man of character that's here. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when he greets his workers, he greets them with the blessing of the Lord, and they greet him back that way. Now, I understand it might just be that's as if the writer is showing us them saying hello to each other. I understand that. Maybe it's just a greeting that they did several times a day. But I think it's significant that we see a blessing from God even in the way he talked to those who worked for him. It's a reminder to me of how telling our language can be. The way we talk about things, the things that we say. If someone got just a brief snapshot of me talking to someone else. If someone showed up, as we see in the story, and just got a brief snapshot of us at work or at school or talking to our friends, what would they be able to tell from our language? And from the very beginning, we see that he is focused on the blessing of the Lord, and that's going to be important. Because remember, as we saw in chapter 1, Ruth has already decided that the God of Naomi, Yahweh, the God of Israel, is going to be her God. We don't know what all she understands about that. I don't know that it's a full-fledged conversion as much as it's a pledge of loyalty to Naomi, but she's going to see what it means to allow God to be her God in this chapter. Now, there's some language here that is different than we would say today. For example, when Boaz sees Ruth and asks, "Whose young woman is this?" We understand in that time, a patriarchal time, you would usually have, if there were women working in the fields, an idea that she belonged to someone in the sense of being married to someone. Whose daughter is this? He's trying to find out more about her. And when he describes the young women who were there, he's thinking of those in his clan and his family. And we wouldn't use that kind of phrasing today, that phrasing that almost indicates a sense of, you know, ownership. Whose is this? But he's trying to find out more. And what's interesting is to think about the position that Ruth is taking up as she's going and gathering in the time of harvest. This was not uncommon. God had in His law to His people set out provisions for foreigners and for those in need that they could glean along with those who were harvesting. And so you left some at the margins and at the corners, and you left places for those who were in need to be able to glean some food so that they could survive. And so what Ruth is doing isn't unusual, but it's not without danger. In fact, there's an old Egyptian inscription that talks about the conduct that people should have. And there's writing in there, some guidelines about not overtaking a woman who is gathering grain. In other words, this was relatively dangerous depending on whose field you were gathering in. In fact, when Boaz speaks to Ruth, he gives her some protection because he commands his men not to harass her, not to bother her. Again, we can't read too much into what that entailed. But remember, we're in the time of the judges. We're in times where things were not always positive and bright for Israel. And there were actions taking place that weren't right. And so it may be that Boaz knows his clan, those who are working for him, and he makes it clear, both to Ruth and to them, that they're not to bother her. And so he's giving her some of that protection. Not only is she gathering behind those who are reaping, but remember, she's from Moab. And we talked last week about the descendants of Moab, and Moab being a son that was produced when Lot's daughters sort of tricked him and made him drunk and took advantage of him so they could have children. Even then, in Numbers 22, it's the king of Moab that's wanting the prophet to give a prophecy against Israel. And so you've already got a checkered past. You've already got a history of conflict. And yet, when Boaz sees Ruth, he allows her not just to gather, but even we see as we continue reading that she comes to him and he invites her to eat when they sit down for a meal. And she has her fill, and she even has some to take back to Naomi. His actions tell us a lot about him. Our actions make a difference. Even in the mundane, daily ways we treat other people, our actions make all the difference. Sometimes when we think about living the Christian faith, it's easy to be distracted by the big things that we can do. You know, if I could just do something big at work, that would really show people who I am. Or I'm just going to do something big. But if you think about it, the people who impact us the most are the people who do the little things that glorify God. Oftentimes, discipleship doesn't consist of just one huge sacrifice, but a million little sacrifices that you add up together. And day in and day out, when you take that extra step and you try to go that extra mile, and you resist saying what you might really like to say to someone, or you do something even when you don't feel like it, time after time, those stack up and eventually leave an example of faith for other people to be encouraged by. Boaz, in some routine and mundane ways, is showing us that actions matter. It also matters how we treat other people who are in need. I'm reminded of the words Jesus would say in Matthew 25 when he describes the Son of Man coming in his glory and sitting on his throne, and this process of sheep on the right and goats on the left. And he says that there are some he would look at and say that, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we do all these things? And his response is, as you did it to the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. And then the opposite is true. When he lists all of these things, these situations he was in, and this other group didn't help him, they say, when did this happen? And he reminds them, it's the way you treated the least of these. Our character is revealed not in the way we treat people who can do something for us, but in the way we treat people who can't do anything for us. Our character is revealed when I do something for someone and there's no way that I could get anything positive in return. It's those little mundane tasks, those daily opportunities I have to serve someone else that really helps build my character into what it needs to be. And so it's a challenge to be reminded that my actions matter. It's also amazing to look through the Old Testament and to see how many times widows like Ruth and orphans are described and how many times there's injustice that takes place for both widows and orphans. It's amazing. Prophet after prophet has to stand up and remind Israel there are people who were being mistreated. There are people who were in need. And as members of the body of Christ today, there should be no one who is more concerned with the needs of other people than Christians. There should be no one who's more concerned when someone is hurting, when someone's in need, when someone's being mistreated than we are. Our actions make a difference. Our actions matter. And then Ruth's response, I think, is interesting because when she talks to Boaz, you find out what has really mattered in Ruth's life. Let's keep reading in chapter 2 and verse 10 as Boaz shows her this kindness. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" Ruth is keenly aware of her status, but Boaz answered her in verse 11, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Just this glimpse into their conversation reminds us what Ruth teaches us, and that is that our reputation matters. Now, we've got to be careful here, because there are some parts of my reputation that I have no control over. You've probably had the experience of someone saying something about you that isn't true. And you know the infuriation of just trying to say, "No, that's really not what I said, that's not what I did." I understand that. But I also think that as we look through Scripture, we see the idea that when we're living out godly values, how people perceive us usually follows suit. For example, when Paul would talk to Timothy and Titus about the qualities needed in an elder, it's no accident that one of those qualities is a good standing in the community, a good reputation. It's not the only quality, but it's an important quality, because eventually the way I live is going to impact the way others see me. The very first verse of Proverbs 22 reminds us that a good name, a good reputation, is more valuable than great riches. And so, in as much as I can control it, I need to realize perception matters. Not because I want to be seen as someone who is good and I want to have some kind of glory that accumulates for me, but if I'm going to glorify God, and if people are looking at me, and they're looking at me and I'm saying I'm a Christian, then my reputation has a reflection on the one I'm serving. And so what he knew about Ruth was that her reputation already preceded her. He didn't know who she was when he saw her. He hadn't seen her before. But once he found out who she was, he knew her story. And he said, "Everything you've done has been told to me." It is kind of a sobering thought to realize there are people you come in contact with that already know about you. Have you ever thought about that before? Sometimes you meet someone and they say, "Oh yeah, well, so-and-so's told me about you." And you have that moment where you're thinking, "Oh no, what have they said about me? Has it been good? Has it been bad? What have they said?" In our world today, it is increasingly easy for people to know something about you before they even meet you. In the world of social media, you can have people knowing all kinds of things about you before they ever get to know you. What kind of impression am I leaving? If all someone knew about me was what other people said about our interactions, what kind of impression would I be leaving? If all people knew about me was what they saw on Facebook or Twitter, what kind of impression would I be leaving? Reputation makes a difference. It made a difference in Boaz's attitude towards Ruth. And it's interesting to me to see that Ruth seems to be someone who's working very hard. The servant said she's already here early in the morning. She's still working. We find out in the rest of the chapter she works until evening. Work was not beyond her. It probably would have been easy to be so overcome with frustration and with grief to say, you know, that's hard work. There are a lot of you who either grew up working outdoors all day or work outdoors during the day now, and you know that's not easy work. It's not easy to be outdoors all the time. And she could have said, you know, I'm above this. Going around and scavenging after grain and trying to just eat the crumbs of what's left over, and I'm above that. I'm better than that. But Ruth didn't have that attitude. She had an attitude of humility and an attitude that was willing to work, and it stands out. It also stands out as he describes the fact that she sought refuge under the wings of God. That term refuge is so powerful. We see it more than 30 times in the Old Testament, this term for refuge in God. I think it's powerful today because we live in a time where people are constantly searching for that refuge. And they might not know how to articulate it, but that's what they're looking for. I was struck by a quote of an author named Douglas Copeland, who's written a book that has been in many different editions called Life After God. And I haven't read the entirety of the book where he reflects on kind of the experiences of his own generation moving past an idea of belief in God and pursuing life according to their own goals. But I did see printed something that was at the end of the book because it was almost shocking to those who would read it. Here is what he says as he ends the book. He says, here is my secret. I tell it to you with an openness of heart that I doubt I shall ever achieve again. So I pray that you are in a quiet room as you hear these words. My secret is that I need God, that I am sick and can no longer make it alone. I need God to help me give because I no longer seem capable of giving, to help me be kind as I no longer seem capable of kindness, to help me love as I seem beyond being able to love. What a fascinating glimpse into the life of someone who is saying we've moved beyond God, but in an honest moment says, you know what, even though I've thought myself to this point in life, and I've thought myself beyond a need for God, I miss what God provides. I still need what only God can provide. He seemed to have enough self-awareness to say there's still something missing. There's a refuge that needs to be taken. There's something that's there. And we live in a world where people are searching for that refuge. And so it's so powerful that we've got this example of Ruth stepping out of her life and where she's been and finding refuge in God. And it's powerful that Boaz recognizes that. And that transition, and what that would have taken. And so the rest of the chapter unfolds in a way that is completely the opposite of chapter 1. Chapter 1, it was just bad news piled on top of bad news. Chapter 2 seems to be good news piled on top of good news. When she comes home and tells Naomi that she worked, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed by the Lord whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Remember in chapter 1, she said God had forsaken her. She was bitter. But now she gets a glimpse of God's work and says, blessed be the Lord. The God who she was so bitter with in chapter 1 is now the God who has blessed her. And she says, this man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. The term used in this situation describes a kinsman redeemer who would be a close enough relative to the deceased husband that Ruth could marry him and they could establish a household. We'll find out more about that as we read chapter 3. But I love the idea that the bitterness of chapter 1 has been overcome with the gratitude of chapter 2. Now, it only takes us a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds even, to flip back and forth between chapters. It takes us longer to live out that time between chapter 1 and chapter 2. But eventually, we can get to a point where we see God's work. Our actions matter. Our reputation matters. And when we find refuge in God, He is ultimately faithful to us, even if we can't always see it where we are. This idea of redemption is all throughout Ruth, and it's interesting and no accidents to me that in verse 4 of Ruth chapter 2, we have Boaz, the Redeemer, coming from Bethlehem. Does that sound familiar? When we think about a Redeemer in Bethlehem, is that something that maybe sets a couple of blinkers going in our mind to remember the birth of Jesus and to remember what He has promised? And so when we think of this language of redemption, a Redeemer from Bethlehem was here. And not only that, but He encouraged Ruth. He said, stay in My fields. Stay in this area. In other words, stay with Me. The Redeemer was going to take care of her. I know it's not exactly the same context, but I can't help asking us the question tonight. Where are we in relationship to our Redeemer? Whose field are we in? Are we staying close to Him? If not, we have the chance to come back. If not, if we have situations in life where things have been filled with bitterness and we want to work through that and to trust in God through that, and we need encouragement of brothers and sisters, we can do that. If we're in a time of gratitude and we want to celebrate something, if we're experiencing something that's challenging and we know we're going to need help, if there's any need that we have, or if we need to just become a child of God and allow Him to redeem us, if there's any way we can help, please let us know as we stand and as we worship together.